Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
We welcome you to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Matchday 30 is in arrears. We are very much on the final stretch. We head midway through June. We are almost at the end. Certain teams will be thankful that their mid-table mediocrity will be put aside, whilst teams still fight to avoid relegation and, of course, gain promotion to the Bundesliga. Joining me once again to discuss all things Zweite Bundesliga is the one and only Eva Lotte-Bohle. Eva, how are you doing today?
I'm a bit tired, but fine otherwise. How are you?
Equally as tired, but we wouldn't miss it. We love the league and we hope to continue this excellent English-speaking version of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast, the only, of course. We thought we'd try something different from looking at the teams at the top to start off. More or less teams that have been on the rise. One of those teams that have been on the rise of recent has been Hannover 96. Another win which gets them into sixth place on this in the standings. And it was a good win. A 2-1 home win over Heidenheim. A dominant first half was very much compounded by goals from Marvin Dux, his 10th of the season, and Edgar Pribb. However, Heidenheim were a lot better in the second half. Stefan Schimmer's 5th goal of the campaign, making it a little bit nervy for Hannover in the last 15 minutes. However, Kino Kokic's side getting a vital win, and now they are, what we would suggest, all but safe from the threat of relegation. Eva, we'll talk about teams that have started well from the restart. And Hannover have certainly, since the prolonged break, have been, relatively capable, and another win.
Yeah, definitely. I think you can really see what this team is capable of and might have been capable of if they had had the right coach at the start of the season. I think especially the first half was really, really good football by them. And Heidenheim, yeah, they didn't really show what they could do only in the second half. But still, I didn't have the feeling that Hannover was really threatened by Heidenheim, that the win was really at stake in the second half. And I think for Heidenheim, this would have been a huge chance to really threaten HSV and Stuttgart once again. But for me, kind of this defeat signals a bit that they might not be in the last fight for promotion afterwards.
Yeah, the two times that I've seen them live, Bochum away and Hannover away, and in both games they were incredibly bad going forward, and as a result the defense just copped an absolute beating. From Hannover's perspective, though, they've been in recently good form, if you exclude the Sandhausen game, wins against Dresden, the comeback win against Osnabrück, and of course the win against Heidenheim. Very much building to something maybe for next season. Probably unlikely we'll see them challenging for the top four, but very much putting themselves in the right direction to make a run at promotion next season. Another team that has found themselves on the rise, as mentioned before, was Bochum. 2-0 win over St. Pauli. They move into 8th place. It could have easily been 3 to 4 goals, but 2 goals cancelled out from Manuel Vinsheimer. Robert Jules getting his first goal in Bochum colours from the spot, and Maxim Leitch getting one on 73 minutes. Another good performance from Bochum. We know that they have got some good offensive capabilities, but once again, a very resolute defensive performance.
Yeah, I think if you look at the first half of the season, every clean sheet for Bochum is a really important one and very, very good for the self-confidence and also for the way going forward. after this season into the new season as well. For them, it's at this point, it's easier to plan because I'm quite sure they play Zweite Bundesliga next year. Manuel Winsheimer, of course, on kind of does a little Mario Gomez show with having two goals disallowed. But on the other hand, very, very poor performance by St. Pauli once again. I think they have really struggled since the restart. They were horrible against Heidenheim as well. They could have easily lost that game, as well as the Darmstadt game. And I think they really have to improve to have four more or less quieter games, not getting easier against Aue, although as we spoke about it, Aue is not really good away, so that's kind of an advantage for them on the weekend, but still those last couple of games weren't really good. And on the other hand, Bochum was one of the best teams with Hannover, I think, since the restart.
Well, you have to go all the way back to February, mid-February, the last time that Bochum lost a game, and it was a 1-0 defeat to Stuttgart. Since then, wins against Dresden, the 4-4 against Sandhausen, 0-0 at Darmstadt, 3-0 over Heidenheim, 0-0 at Karlsruhe, 2-1 over Kiel, 0-0 against Nürnberg, and 2-0 against St. Pauli. There is a key in a lot of these. There are some clean sheets, which is something that was definitely not on the agenda earlier on. But certainly Thomas Rice has done a very good job, and certainly gives the board and those in charge of the club a lot to think about, whether Thomas Rice will be the manager to go forward. He's certainly putting a very good CV, not only to get Bochum almost for clearance in a safe position, but they're playing some good football as well, which is paramount. Our last game in this section would be to talk about Sandhausen. Another win for them, 2-1 win at Greuther Fürth. Goals coming from Kevin Behrens and Julius Biada in the first half. Behrens has 12 goals this season, but Daniel Cater-Ruel made it 2-1 with about 20 minutes remaining. Much like the Hanover game, Sandhausen were made to sweat for a little bit, but Fürth couldn't find a way through. It means that Sandhausen now move up to 11th place in the table in a logjam of teams that are tied on 39 points. Either they did this last season, Sandhausen, where they kind of finished the season like a train with its brakes cut off. Another good first half. It'd be fair to say Fürth were a lot better in the second. But more importantly, their objective is, of course, to survive. They are very close from achieving that.
Yeah, and we always speak about that when we speak about Sandhausen, that they always manage to find their points in the end. This is why they have been in the Zweite Bundesliga for so many years now. And I think you could really see that as well as in the Hannover-Heidenheim game. If you have good first 45 minutes and you manage to use your chances, something that Bielefeld, on the other hand, didn't use or didn't get done. Sometimes it might be enough, especially if you are two goals up. And then I think Fürth, again, as well as Heidenheim, didn't really found ways to put pressure on Sandhausen in a way that they easily gave up another goal. And then it was Fürth, who had a really good start into the season, and already if we speak about the second leg of the 2019-2020 season, they kind of lost the things that made their play, or that really characterized their play, more to say. If that would have happened earlier, I think they might be a bit more concerned, but in the end, they will be in the upper side of the table, and I think that's enough for them.
Yep. Well, since the Stuttgart win, Fürth have kind of meandered with drawing and only a couple of losses, but because of how tight the mid-table has become, they join this logjam of teams that are on 39 points, which includes Bochum, Kiel, Sandhausen, Regensburg, we'll talk about later. But they still have to be a little bit careful, because you've got Osnabrück and St. Pauli on 35 points, who, again, neither team is really catching the eye with in terms of the way they're playing, but some further poor results will see them jump into the mix that they've tried to avoid for most of the season. So they need to be very careful. There's something that we did want to talk about regarding to the new COVID-19 protocols that have been implemented by the DFB. Eva, explain briefly, of course. What have they brought in and what are some of the adjustments from the previous methods that were happening within the stadiums?
Yeah, so there are basically two parts of the new protocols. The first one is that the substitutes don't have to wear masks anymore because they basically already sit 1.5 meters away and they can't wear them as soon as they get on the pitch to warm up. This is probably one of the rules that directly is implemented, as well as there are more journalists allowed in the stadium. I think at this point there are 10 journalists and 3 photographers allowed. I'm not quite sure. They're more allowed now, as well as club officials at this stage. I think 8 from the home side, 4 from the away side. They are allowed to bring in more. I don't know the number for that. And then something to look at for next season is the season is due to start 11th of September. And there were first signs that we might have spectators or fans back in the stadiums, but only about, like, for example, for Stuttgart, around 10,000, 15,000, which people ask about. Well, who is allowed in the stadium then? Is there some kind of lottery who is allowed in and who's not? Only, I don't know, season tickets holders, something like that. So there's still a question for the future, as well as we don't really know if there's a second wave coming. This is the new COVID-19 protocols from this week, I think. And I think they're quite understandable.
Yep, but they are all a good step in the right direction, and eventually, maybe not this season, but some stage next season, hopefully we'll get fans into the stadiums and creating that magnificent atmosphere that we come to love from German football. We'll take our first break, and on the other side we will talk about our title contenders. Our next section looks at the teams in the top three. All teams sharing the exact same results, nothing really changing. But one thing is certain, this league is no cakewalk. One team that found that out very late, once again, was Hamburger SV. A 3-3 draw against Holstein Kiel in a Monday night special. Two sides that were looking to get back onto the winning tread, and it looked like Kiel had got the bounce after Alexander Muhling's goal on 9 minutes. Aaron Hunt and Joel Poyan Palo made it 2-1 within the space of a couple of minutes either side. Then it became 2-2 thanks to Emmanuel Yor's goal. Poyan Palo made it 3-2. And then, as not to sound narcissistic, but as almost as it seemed expectant that they were going to concede Hamburg, and they did in stoppage time when Jason Lee scored his 9th of the campaign to give De Storker a point to go home to. This could have easily turned the tide, either with Hamburg could have been level on points with Stuttgart. They were very good in attack, especially on the left-hand side, but they crumbled when they needed to stand up.
Yeah, I think what really is being pointed out by this game once again, that Hamburg is not really good in holding up leads, you could say. You could see it in the Stuttgart game. You could see it here. It's very, very difficult to look at it and not have like a really weird smile on the face, because it's so much Hamburg. And I really like their way of playing in the first half. It was the same against Stuttgart, especially, as you said, the left attacking side with Leibold and Kittel. Kiel had a lot of problems with that. Nearly every second or nearly every attack came from the left side, and put the Kiel defense under much pressure. But as soon as Kiel put some pressure in any way on Hamburg, they kind of stopped playing their energetic football. And with the substitutions, he brought in three new players at once and took down, I think, Poyampalo and correct me if I'm wrong, Kittel, from those three, and brought up like a very young player that only played one game this season in Amachi, as well as Hinterseer, and later on Harnik. Both players that aren't really famous for their joker roles this season so far. And then there were four corners in a row those last 5 minutes. And HSV didn't find a way just to clear their own box. And in the end, that was a deserved draw, definitely. But I think we also have to speak about the officiating in this game. Hamburg, had a goal taken off because Jatta was standing in front of Gilius, but Gilius, I think, was never going to get the ball anyway, so that wasn't offside for me. On the other hand, that penalty after 20 minutes was a joke, to say the least. And both decisions, the first one was ruled out by VAR. The second one was not ruled out. And then we had a second penalty in the second half where Bastian Danker just runs towards the screen, doesn't even look at it, and immediately sees this is not a penalty, which is okay that it has been taken off, but even on the pitch, that shouldn't have been decided as a penalty because you can clearly see that there is no contact.
Yeah, the officiating certainly left a lot to be desired in the game, and almost the Van Drongelen one, like, I get it as someone who, self-indulgent moment here, played the position of goalkeeper, and a reminder that keepers don't get protected enough. There is some impeding, there's contact, so I guess whenever there's sort of contact like the shepherd that Jatta put, it's always going to get picked up. The penalty is for which Hunt scored to make it 1-1 is incredibly egregious. The fact that was even given a penalty. And ultimately, the game was so poorly officiated that, I guess the draw is probably the best result in the end. It would have almost seemed unfair for either team to take the win. But certainly, another problem for Hamburg, they just cannot stop conceding goals within the final part of the game. I guess the only spark for them is that Joel Poyampalo, 7 goals in these 10 Hamburg appearances, so that is something to look at. I guess we'll stick on the officiating tangent before we get onto our next game, because the decision from the appeal from VfB Stuttgart with the result in Van Wiesbaden was upheld, which means the result will stay as is, which was a 3-2 win to Vayen. But Eva, as you pointed out to me, the statement made from referee Sascha Stegemann left a lot to be desired, and you could maybe understand that some Stuttgart fans would be very annoyed with what he said.
Yeah, I know that 2 weeks ago I made a bit of fun of this decision and the protest from the Stuttgart side, but after reading or hearing the answer by kind of the CEO of German sport law, you could say, or German sport justice, Hans Lorenz, he basically says the referee saw a handball that wasn't allowed, and in that matter correctly said it was a penalty. And then we have something in German football, what we call it, Tatsachenentscheidung, so something that is decided on the field and has something to do with context. And then he continues with the way it all went on and the quality of the dialogue between the referee and the video assistant referee doesn't matter. And you might remember that due to the ghost matches or the games behind closed doors, the spectator in front of the TVs have much more better audio than before, especially on the on the dialogues and on the communication between a referee and VAR. And you can really hear how Sascha Stegemann says, "I can't see anything here, Robert." So talking to Robert Kamka, and he says on this day to the jury that he saw Agadoui playing the ball with his hand, but thinking that the way the arm is placed on the body is too close, that it should be a penalty. This is really weird, because if you look at the pictures, Agadoui's arm is everywhere but not close to the body. And this kind of gives the impression that Stegemann is not lying, but is just not really telling the whole truth. And it would be much more easier to really communicate the audio, because it would be much more understandable for everyone involved. I think, and then Hans E. Lorenz also says something that really surprised me, is he says, protests, they just like, they're for children. We didn't do anything about the Bakary Yatta thing. We're not going to do anything about this now. And to compare those both things is really, really weird and has nothing to do with each other. But he basically says, if we start admitting mistakes now, everyone will demand justice for wrong decisions. It's okay that the VAR can make mistakes and there can be uncertainties about how to communicate and how to decide things. But as I, or every football fan and every team in this league, would think that they should admit if they made mistakes. And I think at this point, I can understand Stuttgart. They want to wait until the written decision is being done. If they want to say about it and kind of go on to the next level, jury-wise and justice-wise. But at this point, I can understand them.
Yeah, it is understandable. However, I would be very surprised if it does get overturned anyway. Being that it's such a difficult and something that I'm sure we've rarely seen to overturn a result, which may, I'm not entirely sure what would be the best outcome. It would be unfair for Wiesbaden to drop points, which they earned. They earned the 3 points by scoring more goals. So I'm not entirely sure how it'll probably stand up, but also to compare an incident that happened in a football game against something that was threatening a person's livelihood. Yeah, you're not really comparing things. That's, not his best work, it has to be said. We'll stick with Stuttgart, because they hosted Osnabrück on Sunday. That game ended 0-0. It wasn't a lot to say about this game. It was tight defensively. Stuttgart had a number of chances, although it's fair to say the quality of those chances either weren't really good enough to test Philipp Kühn.
that's a nice way to put it. I think the best chance we saw in those 90 minutes were Osnabrück's Giert failing to score 4 meters. I don't know, like, this is something that I think every striker can do, just be at the right place at the right time. And but Stuttgart was very, very poor up front, I thought. They didn't really test Philipp Kühn. I think Stuttgart fans themselves said there was not in any way a 100% chance or shot on goal in those 90 minutes. And this is... Stuttgart played a bit like they were content with that draw. That 0-0 draw, that, like, okay, that's okay for us. This is a point, this is more than no points. And if you look at the table situation, they were second, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. They're still second.
Yep.
And Osnabrück was 14th. And although Arminia failed to win against them as well, Osnabrück only won one game in the last, I don't know, 8 or 9 matches. That's not a lot, and with the quality Stuttgart has, as well as their aim to get promoted, this is way too less. And especially seeing how the other teams played, that would be huge step forward. And yeah, they failed to do that.
They did, and yeah, they lacked the cutting edge. I guess we've harped on it quite a bit about Stuttgart's attack. They do have the youngest squad in the league, which, you know, that's fine, but they have an endless amount of talent, we know that. So, big missed opportunity. They could have really closed the gap on Arminia Bielefeld and had a 3-point cushion to Hamburg. A big missed opportunity for them. Osnabrück, in fact, 1 win in their last 13. So, they have been very, very grim when it comes to picking up results. That means we shall go to the league leaders, Arminia Bielefeld, who hosted Nuremberg. That game ended a goal apiece. Fabian Klose finally broke his goal-scoring drought. He now has 18 for the season. However, a brilliant set piece by Nuremberg saw Patrick Eras get his second of the campaign and make it 1-1. Klose had a chance to make it 2-0 just after his goal. However, after rounding Christian Matenia, his shot struck the upright. And then at the other end in the second half, Nuremberg almost stole all 3 points, but the claw of Stefan Ortega ensuring that the points remain equal. Either, I guess, a frustrating result for Bielefeld against Nuremberg, who, in theory, were the underdogs in this game. That being said, with the results around the league, not a bad result in that sense.
Yeah, but still, I didn't see the game live because I was working, but I looked at the highlights and I think only Klose had 3 chances to score and only used one of them. He had one like after 8 or 9 minutes, and there hit the post, or I think it was a Nuremberg player who had a leg between him and the goal. Then that second one that you spoke about, he normally makes them like eyes closed, blindfold or whatever. And this is something we saw against Kiel as well. And this is what I spoke about earlier. They had their chances. Jonathan Klaus had one of his best games since the restart, I think. Really, really good assist to the Klose goal. And yeah, it's not the thing that I'm just pissed, I can say, about the leveling. It's the second half, which is quite similar to the Kiel game, I think. I don't know why, but for some reasons, Neuhaus thought it's a good idea to change tactics, and that really put every way of attacking. I think Arminia only had 1 or 2 chances in the second half. And Nuremberg had, as you said, much more chances to get all 3 points in the second half. And this is, for me, still a bit worrying for the last 5 games that we have, of course, because we still play Dresden. And I do hope that Neuhaus will find a way to motivate the team to not only have 45 good minutes and use their chances, please do, also be in the game for 90 minutes, because I think that was really something that was lacking in the Kiel game, although they found a way to score in the end, but as well as in the Nuremberg game now.
Yeah, it desperately feels like that Bielefeld need a half where they just go off and they just score 2-3 goals and absolutely obliterate a side, because it just hasn't felt like the same Bielefeld that we've known for the majority of this season. Certainly one of the teams that hasn't particularly benefited in terms of form, thanks to the restart. But I guess the key thing here is they're not dropping a lot of points. And that's probably more important. They're not losing games, they are drawing them. So I guess in retrospect, it's not that bad. You have to go all the way back for the last time that Bielefeld were beaten. So the St. Pauli game in 2019. So it's not too bad for Nuremberg. an okay point. They're still in a tricky position. They are 3 points above Karlsruhe. They cannot afford to lose touch with the teams like St. Pauli and Osnabrück. Otherwise, they will be very nervous heading into the final few games. We'll take our last break, and on the other side, we'll look at the rest of the fixtures and your topic questions. Certainly for some of these teams, a sign of life. Our last section has not three, but four games to discuss, but we'll quickly get through those. Two of them featuring Dynamo Dresden, who were on the road at VfL Wiesbaden on Saturday afternoon. This is a game that I actually did cover. And let's be fair, but not insulting to Dynamo, the result didn't really represent the game. Wiesbaden should have put Dresden away before half-time, and they didn't. And as a result, they were made to sweat for it, and they found a way to lose it. Dominik Franke, who had an absolute shocker of a game, he gave Dresden the lead with an own goal, uncontested. Then Daniel Coffey, Kirai scored his sixth goal of the campaign. Fantastic celebration as well for solidarity for Black Lives Matter. Moritz Kuhn made it 2-1, and then Patrick Schmidt's incredible header made it 2-0 at half-time. When it seemed likely that Wiesbaden were going to get a goal to win, it would be Dresden with Simon Marquignoc, the footballing hipster, which we love, by the way. He's a really cool dude. Made it 3-2, vital 3 points for Dresden. Eva, this is very important in the context of the season, because we'll talk about their game against Fürth that happened last night. It closes the gap on Veen, but also puts Karlsruhe in the mix. And that sort of relegation playoff spot is very much for the taking for Dresden if they can pick up points in their catch-up games.
Yeah, it once again shows that nothing in this league is easily decided very early at this stage. I gotta say, I think for Dresden, it was a huge, huge step, because they really struggled against Stuttgart, for example, and or just against Stuttgart, sorry. I think it was very important for them to score that winning goal and after 89 minutes, because it kind of symbolizes that they, fitness-wise, they can keep up for 90 minutes. Although I really have to say that second goal for Wiesbaden was a horrible mistake by, I think, Kevin Poir. He just comes out of the box and then is even responsible for the goal getting in, or the shot. Yeah, it wasn't really his game at that stage, but I think on the other hand he had some good saves in the end. But yeah, for Wien, I think Rüdiger Rehm said before that he wants to show that he takes this game seriously and that he still thinks that they are very close to get saved, or at least reach the playoff spot. And yeah, two goals were just not enough, and for them, very, very unlucky to lose this. It's not going to get easier with them traveling to Kiel on the weekend. On the other hand, for Dresden, with the game that happened last night against Greuther Fürth, with a 1-0 draw, they at least picked up four points in the last three games. I think that's not how they would expect it, but especially before the game against Hamburg on Friday and the game against Bielefeld on Monday, two really, really difficult games, it was good to get the points now.
Absolutely, and they've had a very rough... They had a rough start coming back from the break, and who would have thought that their first goal was actually going to be an own goal? That would be Dynamo. I do feel sorry for Wiesbaden, because they actually did a lot of the good things right tactically in this game. They implemented their 3-3-3-1, which is just weird, but playing it on a video game, it's actually quite a lot of fun, because you can have those overlaps, and especially it's actually a lot of fun when you're playing international games, which I was doing on my PlayStation. They really could have put Dresden well and truly out of this game. They didn't. As a result, they really could have got themselves out of the bottom two. Onwards and upwards, as many would say. We'll stick with Dresden because they did play last night, as Eva mentioned. Greuther Fürth away. Daniel Cateruel got the opening goal in that game. And then Simon Marquinhoc, second game in a row, he has a goal. He has three for the season now. They get the points. A vital point, I guess, that now puts them on level on points with Wiesbaden. 2 points behind Karlsruhe. Still got the game in hand against Arminia Bielefeld. That comes next week. If they could get something out of the game against Hamburg, they are within a chance to at least get to the playoff, which is going to be hotly contested going down to the final match day. They're there or thereabouts, but their performances, all of them, it's fair to say, have been far from convincing. Let's move to Jan Regensburg, who are a side that 2020 has not treated them particularly nicely, but they were fantastic in their 3-0 win over Darmstadt. It is their first win since they beat Wiesbaden back on the 15th of February. Marcel Correa, Max Bershikov, Jan George, the goal scorers. It was a very good performance for Jan, but I guess if we were to talk about Darmstadt, they had a really weird game, Eva, and yeah. Very much, it almost seems that mentally the team is ready to depart from Dimitris Gramotsis and bring in Marcus Anfang in.
Especially if you look at all the games that Regensburg played since the restart, this would have been the game that I would wouldn't have expected for them to get 3 points and a clean sheet, actually. Especially looking at how good Darmstadt was, like, for example, looking back at the 4-0 win over St. Pauli. But I think that missed penalty by Kempe really, yeah, symbolizes that game for Darmstadt very well. For Regensburg, huge, huge sign, and has a huge symbolic just for them to get a clean sheet, to not, after being 2-0 up, conceding two goals in the follow-up game. But we're in the follow-up of the game, but yeah, very, very good for them. And especially someone like Max Bezushkov really showed the importance for the team in the last couple of weeks. And they might be lucky of not getting a completely new team next season. So there might be some calming end of this season afterwards.
Yeah, it also shows that they've got a pulse because they've been struggling of recently. To keep leads has been one of them. And defensively, they've made some pretty horrible errors. So it might have been quite humorous for them to see that the last goal in particular was off a defensive error from Darmstadt. Our last game of what was match day 30, Erzgebirge Auer and Karlsruhe. This game ended a goal to nil in favour of Auer. Florian Kruger's goal was the difference in this game. But it would seem that VAR stole the show in this one, as Marco Juricin produced a wonderful individual goal, but it was disallowed thanks to offside. And Eva and I were talking about this off-air and tried to compare the goal that was allowed for Jaesung Lee and the one that was disallowed for Marco Juricin. And it would be interesting on Twitter, as once this episode comes out, give us your thoughts on the two decisions, because they're pretty similar in the way that they look, but they were adjudicated maybe a little bit differently.
Yeah, I asked you whether you thought this it should have been taken off, or that was rightly been chopped off of Karlsruhe, especially I thought it was really, really beautiful goal, and it was really close. I think the only part of the body that is clearly in front of the Auer player is the hand, as well as, if you spoke about it, or as you spoke about it, the legal, where basically there is the bottom of, I think, Timo Letschert, and then it's Lee's hand that is before it. So very close to share the decisions on both ends, but not the same. Yeah, decisions been made by the referee, so a bit weird. And for Karlsruhe, a bit unlucky, because I think they especially after Owl scored in the first half. They had some very good chances. Owl wasn't really doing anything after the goal. Only in the second half, they were getting back, I think, after 48 minutes, they had the first shot on goal after their leading goal. So a bit unlucky for Karlsruhe to not get any points here, because I think they had really good chances, especially in the first half. And the offside draw is still not completely clear to me in some stages, because I always think that you're not allowed to score a goal with your hand, and in some stages that is offside, some stages it isn't, so very weird.
Yeah, the equal parity with both decisions is that neither was looked at by the video assistant referee. So tells a lot, again, about everything. But a good win for Auer, that puts them to 41 points. We've mentioned on the podcast that 40 is probably the target for safety. Job done for Dirk Schuster, we would suggest. Auer looks like they'll be in the Zweite Bundesliga for another season. We have a number of topic questions to discuss. And let's start with this one from Harshith SR, who asks, how is Aaron Hunt from Hamburg getting a contract extension? Clearly frustrated about the fact that he only seems to play well when an extension is on the way, and even then he's quite mediocre. Very strong words. Eva, I guess the question is, because my impression anyway, when Sonny Kittel was to come in, that it would be less Hunt and more Sonny, but it does seem that Hunt is a player that Dieter Hecking brings in for the big games. What's your impression of him as a player at the moment? And do you reckon that the question that we've been asked is justified?
Good question. I thought when he was still, or back in business, you could say, with HSV, I was thinking like, okay, he can still play football. He seems quite old to me. Then he had some couple of good games. But we're at a stage of the season where he basically is, for me, only put on to show presence, and just because I think he is kind of a leading figure for the team, and just in the way that with all his experience in his Bundesliga years, he just shows what he can do on the pitch. But on the other hand, if you compare it to Joel Poyampalo, he doesn't really show that danger in front of the goal. I mean, of course he scored the penalty on the weekend, and quite safely he did. So, but for me, I don't really fully understand why you would extend his contract.
Must be a good locker room guy, as you mentioned, because I think there are probably better options, not to mention they do have Louis Schaub, who was, again, an unused substitute in this game, and one that, admittedly, a few of us may have forgotten was still at Hamburg, which says a lot about the 12 months that he's had. I'm not entirely sure what the logic is. Only they know, but he must be a good presence for the younger players in the squad. And I think that would be to hopefully. And I do apologize if I mispronounce your name. Let's move on to our next question. From Steel Penguin 3. Hello, everybody. Hope you and your families are safe. Thank you. Likewise. What is going on with Hamburg? Is it the youth or mental lapses or something else? Now, they do have the sixth youngest squad in the Zweite Bundesliga this season. Last season, they had the youngest. Stuttgart this season have that mantle quite comfortably. I guess the mental mistakes they make are always glaring. I'm not entirely sure the best way to describe it, but they make a lot of mistakes at really bad times, and it seems to cost them quite dearly. Not sure how you feel about it either, but certainly they switch off at really bad times, and as a result, they end up conceding.
Yeah, I was pretty sure that HSV would not do the same things that they did last year, that they've learned out of it, but somehow you can't really get this out of the club, but you can see it in the other two or three clubs that are in the top four as well. Yeah, I don't know. It might be the pressure. It might be, even though the fans aren't in the stadium anymore, it might be just the pressure from outside. Everything that is connected to it, that they had quite a good start into the season with Dieter Hecking. And at this point, they, I don't know if it is mental at some stage, if it's nerves, if it's constant changing in the lineups as well, especially if you look at the back four maybe, or like just at Van Drongelen and Letschert, that those two aren't always quite safe, then I still don't really know if it was a clever decision to now put in a new goalkeeper in Pollersbeck. Do not understand Hecking, as I said before, with substitutions in general, sometimes lineups as well, but I'm no football coach. I don't have any insights into the training, but yeah, it seems a bit weird, and it's kind of, I don't think they're going to be fourth like last year, because I think Heidenheim is kind of losing its nerves as well on the finishing line. But you can just once again see that the Zweite Bundesliga isn't in any way something where you can just go through and easily be finished with at all.
Amen to that. Our last question is from Reverend McKinley Sims. He asks, with four match days left, is it realistic for any team outside the top four to get into the promotion spot? I know this was a question we got last week, but also it is relevant because there has been some movers and shakers. He says Hannover 96, maybe. Again, Eva, we asked this answered this question last week, but we'll be happy to answer it again. The top four as it is, Bielefeld, Stuttgart, Hamburg, Heidenheim, 48 points, and then it's 5 points between them and Darmstadt. Then you've got Hannover on 42, Auer on 41. Is it conceivable that any of those teams, that the last three that I mentioned, could make it a play for the top four?
I do not think so, no. I know that last week I said that I think Darmstadt could be one of the teams threatening in it, and then they lost. and this would have been really the last team, and I think it's just too late for teams like Hannover to really start to threaten the upper teams now. It's just like 2, 3, 4 match days too late. I'm pretty sure those, as I said before, those last four on top will definitely be the four that decide who is going to be promoted and who is going to be in the playoff spot after all.
I concur. It would be very hard for any of those teams realistically to make it. It would have to take an unbelievable undoing of any of those four teams to really make it happen for a team like Hannover or Darmstadt. Thanks once again for listening to another episode of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We will be back next week to discuss all the action from match day 31. From Eva and myself, Matthew, enjoy your weekend of Zweite Bundesliga football, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.